Russia has accused Ukraine of carrying out a terror attack outside Moscow Saturday. A car bomb killed Daria Dugina, the daughter of ultra-nationalist Russian commentator Alexander Dugin. Ukraine denies responsibility, but it is bracing for potential Russian retaliation. And in Kyiv, officials have banned large public gatherings to celebrate Ukraine's Independence Day on Wednesday. It will mark 31 years since the end of Soviet rule in the country. So let's get a sense of the war in Ukraine 180 days in. Jeffrey Edmonds studies the Russian military at the research and analysis organization CNA, and he's former director for Russia at the White House National Security Council. Jeffrey, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start with the car bomb attack in the Moscow area over the weekend that killed Daria Dugina? Russian authorities accuse Ukrainian special services of murder. Ukraine has denied that. Could this lead to a significant Russian retaliation on the battlefield?
Right. So I think that the Russians, regardless of the ultimate cause or who was behind the car bombing, will likely step up attacks or long-range strikes against cities in Ukraine, but they were going to continue striking cities regardless. I do think that the FSB's announcement that they know who did this, it was a woman with a daughter in tow, and she's escaped in a Mini Cooper into Estonia, is pretty incredulous.
Incredulous. I see a lot of details that they came out with, that they escaped to Estonia. You don't make much or anything of what the FSB is saying?
I suppose it could be true. It just seems highly unlikely. I mean, this took less than 24 hours. When you look back to, say, the assassination of Boris Nemtsov, the opposition politician, in 2015, it took them weeks to come up with something. And so it just seems very unlikely that this is the actual story behind the bombing.
Oh, I see. Okay. So backing up, we are 6 months past the initial invasion on February 24th. What is your sense of the strategic reality on the battlefront today? Where are things now?
So right now, if you look across the battlefront, it's largely, on average, static. You have pushes here and there, some small exchanges of territory, but really no big changes. And I think, in part, the Russian side is fairly exhausted. The Ukrainians have also taken a lot of casualties and are also pretty tired. But I think the big question we're waiting for right now is, what about this big Ukrainian counteroffensive that everybody has talked about? We haven't seen that yet. I think part of the reason is that we've seen that the Ukrainians are using these HIMARS, long-range precision artillery pieces to high effect against Russian command and control, logistics nodes, and things like that. And so I think, if I had to guess, what the Ukrainians are doing is waiting to, in a sense, set the conditions for success in this counteroffensive in the south by making it very difficult for the Russians to resupply themselves.
And do you have a sense of how that's going, if indeed Ukraine is kind of preparing for this offensive, counteroffensive?
Right. So I think that the Ukrainians and these attacks against these depots and bridges and things like that have had a significant impact on the Russians. But this is a very dangerous kind of calculation, in the sense that while it's made it more difficult for the Russians to resupply, that doesn't mean it has stopped them from resupplying and preparing. So you only want to do this for so long before you actually need to go on the offensive. The other thing here is, I'm sure there's political pressure, or at least the Ukrainians feel political pressure, to accomplish something before the winter, right? There's this worry that if they're not accomplishing something, it feeds the narrative that, well, maybe they can't do this and we need to push for negotiations.
Ukrainian forces have for so long been on the defensive. Is offense harder than defense?
So in some ways it is. You have moving pieces, you have to synchronize different groups and concentrate combat power. And it's a difficult command and control type of operation. That doesn't mean the defense is easy. A well-executed defense is not just sitting in a hole and waiting for the enemy to come attack you. If you're defending a territory, you have to worry about multiple different ways and contingencies that your adversary could attack you. So you also have to worry about synchronizing and being flexible.
Okay. And if indeed a Ukrainian counteroffensive is coming, say in the fall, what do you imagine are the most important targets, places to recapture?
So I think the city of Kherson in the south is really, one of the strategic points that is most important. The south in general is just strategically, in my opinion, more important than Donbass, largely because of the economic consequences of being cut off from the Black Sea. And so I think that Kherson, or somewhere to the east of that, will be the likely focus of the counteroffensive.
And when you say access to the Black Sea, and we've talked a lot about grain exports and the economic importance of that, in what other ways is it important to have access to the Black Sea?
Access to the Black Sea, you know, obviously has economic importance, but also just the retaking of territory in the south that's not associated with 2014 and Donbas. I think that becomes politically important, and for the morale of the Ukrainian people, Ukrainian forces, and for continued Western support. And I think that's more likely than taking parts of Donbas back, because, you know, it's more difficult for the Russians to defend the south. And I think just traditionally, it's just more important for the Ukrainian government to demonstrate that it can take these territories back.
Okay. And on the Russian side, how is the Russian occupation of eastern Ukraine, the Donbas region, going? What are we learning about the Russian occupation?
So the occupation itself, I mean, if you're a native of eastern Ukraine, the Donbas, it's probably not great, because the Russians are using the young men there as, in a certain sense, cannon fodder, you know, using them in the front lines. And it's just a horrible situation. The Russians are gaining a little bit of territory here and there, but it's not clear to me at all that they can seize the cities that are remaining in the region.
So if things are indeed somewhat static, as you're describing, how do Russian strategists see this? Surely much different than the picture they anticipated when the invasion began February 24th.
Right. I think right now the Russians are scrambling to try to hold on to what they have. They've shifted a lot of forces to the south and are really worried about this counteroffensive in the south, because if they lose territory there, that doesn't look good politically either. You know, ever since moving from attacking Kyiv and Kharkiv to just being able to focus on the east really is an embarrassment to the Russian military. There isn't much more that the Russian military can do besides slowly try to make gains in these areas and hold on to what it has.
So if this becomes a long slog in through the winter and beyond, does that favor one side or the other?
I think it's hard to say. I don't see this turning into something like the Georgia War or the other frozen conflicts that we think of, you know, that Russia is normally involved in. I think a better, although not perfect, analogy would be something like the Kashmir conflict between India and Pakistan, where you have a border war that leads to high levels of violence for years. And so we could see a number of, in a certain sense, many wars over this border over the coming years, right? This is not the case where the Russians are trying anymore, it seems, to just pop up an independent area inside of another country to weaken it. They actually want to, you know, annex this territory for Russia. And I think that turns this into a border war, which is dynamically a very different thing.
So, I mean, as you look forward to, say, a potential long-term border war, is it any clearer what the end game may look like? I saw some quotes over the weekend of a Russian official saying, oh, we don't want to pursue a diplomatic settlement here.
Right. I don't think either side wants a diplomatic settlement at this point. And there are different dynamics here. I mean, the Russian military has serious structural and manpower problems that it is not fixing effectively right now. Whereas the Ukrainians have a national mobilization, they're getting Western support in, and as long as that continues, they're actually in more of an upward trajectory, you know, as far as combat power goes compared to the Russian military. So it's not clear to me at all that the Russians can hold on to all of the territory they have. It doesn't necessarily mean that I think the Ukrainians can push the Russians completely out of Ukraine or take back Crimea. But right now, the outlook, from my perspective, is more negative for the Russians than it is for the Ukrainians.
Jeffrey Edmonds is a research scientist who focuses on the Russian military at the research and analysis organization CNA. Jeffrey, thank you again for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.